Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Hey, what's up, everyone? My name is Dave. Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. It is episode 80. It is January 2019, and we're all still in that fog, I think, of just starting the whole new year. And if you're not in that fog, that probably means that you're a leader and you're already thinking about how can I get the most out of my team in 2019. Well, today that's what we're going to be talking about. I am here in the Think Orange bunker as always, which I'm now calling the Think Orange Port-a-John. And typically I'm in here with somebody, but today I'm not. I'm in here all on my own. But our producer, Kevin, K-Daddy, is on the outside, and I'm just going to... K-Daddy, are you there? Are you there, K-Daddy? Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Hey, K-Daddy, how are you?
I'm good.
Are you having a great start to the year?
So far, so good.
I am so glad to hear that. Hey, K-Daddy, I've got a question for you. Today, we're going to be talking about techniques for getting the best out of your team. And I know that we normally typically speak to church leaders and youth ministry leaders and things like that. Okay. But I wanted to ask you, have you ever led a team? And if so, what was the biggest team you led?
Well, I was a restaurant manager.
A restaurant manager? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How many staff underneath you?
Oh my, at least 50-something.
50?
Yeah.
And what was the restaurant? Are you allowed to say?
I probably would. I'm not sure they even still exist.
Golden Corral.
No, that wouldn't have been.
So what is your tip? If you had one tip for getting the best out of a team, regardless of what industry they work in or regardless of the size, what would that be from your years of experience?
You have to empower them.
That's really good. Why is that so important to empower?
Well, one thing, if a person knows you believe in them and you help and you're encouraging them to do certain things, if they know you believe, they'll reach out and go all over for you.
Well, there it is. That's today's episode, done and dusted right there. If you can empower your team and let them know that you believe in them, then they will go to great lengths for you. K-Daddy, thank you so much. That is absolutely awesome. Hey, for all of you who are listening, I know that if you've been in ministry for longer than just a couple of months, you've probably already discovered that you need more than just yourself to accomplish the vision that you've been given or to accomplish the things that are on your to-do list. And that's what we're talking about today. You're going to be hearing from not just K-Daddy, but you're also going to be hearing from Doug Fields. Doug is the Executive Director of Homewood Center for Youth and Family Ministries at Azusa Pacific University. He's the co-founder of DownloadYouthMinistry.com and he's the author of more than 50 books. And we're also going to be hearing from Amber Baker, who is a children's pastor at Azusa Pacific University and a coach at KidMenCoach.com. Now, together, they have more than 50 years of experience in ministry, and they're going to share all the things that they've learned about maximizing the potential of your team. We were lucky enough to have Sarah Bragg and my good friend Dan Scott interview Amber at Orange Conference 2018. Speaking of, today's episode is proudly brought to you by Orange Conference 2019. That's right, 2019. Now, Orange Conference is a three-day conference in Atlanta, Georgia for your entire family ministries team. And here's the thing. Did you know that there's a reason? I don't know if you're still listening, K-Daddy, but did you know that there's a reason why some volunteers have a deeper commitment? There's a reason why some parents engage at a more practical level, why some ministries make a greater impact and some churches have a wider influence? There's a reason why some leaders leave a lasting mark. It happens when they make it personal.
Wow.
Your enthusiasm for the Orange Conference blows me away. There's also, here's another thing for you. Ready for this? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Things changed when Jesus called Zacchaeus by name, when he addressed the Samaritan woman's past, when he spent time in Mary and Martha's home, when he invited each individual disciple to follow him, and when he intercepted Saul on the road to Damascus. Do you want to know what made a difference?
What made a difference?
What made a difference was that Jesus got personal.
Wow.
And here's the great thing. At Orange Conference 2019, you're going to learn how to make your ministry personal in the lives of the next generation. So make sure you go and register right now. Stop everything that you're doing. If you're driving your car, pull over, turn the engine off, and then pick up your phone and go to theorangeconference.com, theorangeconference.com. Make sure you register for Orange Conference 2019. You will not want to miss it. I'm going to be there. I know it's going to be amazing. You're going to see K-Daddy running around with a flag and streamers, and he's acting like one of those blow up guys that you see at car dealers, you know, that sort of thing. He's so excited about Orange Conference 2019. I don't know if he is. Are you?
I'm excited.
Good for you. Well done. Well, we're going to get straight into today's content. Here is a clip that we picked out from Mr. Doug Fields.
For 30 years, I've been on a church staff, 11 years at one, 19 at another, played a lot of different roles, mostly, you know, always in the youth ministry role, but being on an executive team, being over a group of leaders, being family ministry, the whole bit, I've had to do a lot of my ministry leading other people. See, there was a little bit of a bait and switch in my life as I came to Christ as a teenager. And when I came to Christ, really, before that, I wanted to be a professional baseball player. And then I realized you had to be good at something to be a professional. And so I wasn't good, so I became a Christian. I fell in love with my youth pastor. And I wanted to be a youth pastor because he helped me meet Jesus. And so what I thought is, if I go in the youth ministry route, I can play the games and do the talking thing and hang out with kids and eat pizza. And how great is that? And then I actually went to Bible college and seminary, and I got on a church team, and I realized that the bait and switch was, if you want to be effective, it's not just hanging out with kids. If you want to be effective, you actually have to develop leaders. And even when I went into large churches, you know, both churches, one church I was at, Mariner Church in Southern California, was the fastest growing church in the country in the 80s. And what we realized is that we couldn't staff to the capacity in which we grew. Then I went to Saddleback Church, which was booming, and we realized the same thing. What I began to value was not the great communicators, not even necessarily the great strategic thinkers or the people who could write curriculum. What I began to value was the people who could lead others well. Does that make sense? That if you can lead others well, that you can actually enhance your ministry, you can grow your ministry, you can scale with your ministry. So really what I'm talking about, Reggie asked me to do something on teams, bringing out the best in others. So for some of you in here, that will be your volunteer team. For others of you, that will be a paid staff team. Well, there was a guy that I met right just a couple minutes ago as I was setting up my computer. He said, I wasn't able to make it in this class, but the title of this class is My Prayer for Leadership. And I thought, oh, that was beautiful. Because really, if you go into your leadership role with that being your prayer, how do I bring out the best in others? I think you're going to be a successful leader. So what I want to do is I just want to pause and let's thank God for just this day to be alive and ask God's Spirit to do His work. So Jesus, pray for these men and women, most of them that I don't know, but you know their heart and you know their situation. You know their hurdles. You know what they're good at and what they're weak at. Now I pray that my words would get out of the way, that you would take my broken and inadequate words and thinking through the power of your Holy Spirit. Would you refresh us with some idea, some thought, some tip, some movement that we could take back and apply in our setting right away? We ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen. I came back from a trip to Mexico several years ago, and it was the biggest mission trip our church had ever taken. We took over 500 teenagers across the border into a foreign country. We had 20, 30 vans. It was a logistical nightmare, one of the most difficult times of my life as a leader. And I came back to the church, and you know what it's like if you've ever led an event. You don't have to have youth ministry experience, but you've led an event. Chances are you're the last to leave, right? Because people are like leaving chairs and sleeping bags and different things like that. And so when you're the last to leave, it's kind of discouraging. It's kind of, kind of depressing. But I get in my car. Finally, everybody's gone. The trip is over. It's time to go home. I'm leaving the church parking lot, and my pastor drives up in his car. And so we kind of pull up next to each other like, you know, the cops do and they eat donuts together. And, you know, we're talking out of their each. And I was like a little puppy dog. I was like, you know, like, okay, you know, tell me I did a good job. I'm tired. I've been gone all week. It was a big movement in the church, the whole bit. And my pastor says, doesn't ask me a thing about the trip. He says, do you know how many people we baptized the week after Easter? Because that was the week that we were gone. It was our spring break. And then he went in to talk about the baptism and the whole bit. And there was this moment that I had where I just thought, golly, you know, people are leaders. If we could only lead like we want to be led. Okay? So you just think about that. If you could only lead like you want to be led. That right there is a game changer. What is it that you as a leader want from the people that are over you? What I wanted at that time is I wanted some recognition. I wanted some affirmation. I wanted some attaboys. I wanted some, you know, whatever it might be. Now, that's not necessarily a slam on that leader. He's an amazing, amazing man, amazing leader, amazing pastor, preacher, the whole bit. But here's the reality. Every leader is a bundle of strengths and weaknesses. They just are. Every leader is a bundle of strengths and weaknesses, and everybody looks better from a distance. But the reality is, a lot of times we come to stuff like this, and we look at these other people that are, oh, they're amazing speakers, amazing leaders, from a distance. Can I just tell you that leadership is really not about comparison, because anytime you compare, you will lose. Okay? Anytime you compare, you lose, because you're going to want to go one of two ways. One, you're going to move to an area of pride, right? That's a loss. Or you're going to feel bad or insecure about yourself, and that's a loss. So that is, you know, as we start this thing talking about leadership and how do we bring out the best in others, I just want to say to you, quit trying to be Andy Stanley. Quit trying to be Reggie Joyner or Beth Moore or whoever your superhero is. You know, be yourself. Be yourself, because when you're authentically yourself and you lead how you wish you were led, you're going to be an amazing and a great leader. So I've had the privilege to lead a lot of teams. I've had the privilege to pour into a lot of people over 35 years of ministry, 30 years in the church, and then the last 5 years, I started a company called Download Youth Ministry, and we have a team of leadership, team that's, I think, is a pretty amazing team. But what I'm finding more and more about the church is that, you know, when I'm with youth workers, I'll say, how many of you, well, let's just ask you this, how many of you wish you had more volunteer leaders? You wish you had more volunteers, right? So you look around, you go, okay, we have a leadership problem, but I don't think that's the real leadership problem in the church. I think the real leadership problem in the church is that you and I, in our church environments, we're not very good at developing other leaders. I have a buddy of mine, met him on a church softball team, came to Christ a little bit, long story fun, owns a restaurant called Boneheads. And because I was instrumental in his life, it's funny, this is the guy that changed my life. And I always am explaining to him, no, more, that was Jesus. Okay, that I just helped you meet him, all right? But I get to eat at his restaurant for free. And so I go there all the time. I sit in a booth. I put on my headphones and I work. But a lot of times he'll be in the booth behind me. And he takes his cooks and his employees, and he does to them what I've never seen in the church. He coaches them up. He cares for them. I'm like, dude, Morgan, if you could get into the church culture, he goes, no, everybody does this in business. I go, well, maybe they do in business, but they don't do it in the church. In 30 years working in the church, you know how many times I've been critiqued on my speaking? One time, okay? I was the number two preacher at Saddleback Church for 19 years. One time did I get any evaluation. One time my pastor told me that my weddings that I do are too long. Okay, your weddings, they need to be shorter. Okay, you know, that was it. We're just not very good at developing people, right? Wouldn't you say that? That a lot of times, you know, we have a little, I need to hire a children's person, or I need to hire this person. We have it on our task list, and then we check it off when we finally get that person, and then we turn our back on them. And I think we just, you know, that's why I love the fact that you signed up for this, or there's nothing else open and you came to this, whatever it was. But, you know, to be a developer of leaders, to bring out the best in others, you have to be intentional about it. It's not accidental. We don't have to be intentional about getting older. We're good at that. We don't have to be intentional about becoming more, you know, relevant. Maybe we do, I don't know. But we've got to be intentional about developing leaders, or else our leadership, our message, our values, our heart dies with us. So I think leaders have to decide if they want to leave a legacy of one or a legacy of many. I think if you want to bring out the best in others, you have to give up your pride. You have to move your ego to the back seat. As a matter of fact, what would be a better move is to kick your ego out of the car altogether. And I realize that those of us in the serving ministry, especially those of you in children and youth, you don't get a lot of strokes. You don't get a lot of encouragement anyway. And so anytime you do, you know, like you preach your heart out and a kid comes up to you and you think they're going to say, "Pastor, that was the greatest message I've ever heard. You know, I just love the way that you teach." They say, "Can I borrow a dollar for a Coke?" You know, it's that type of thing. So, you know, you don't get a lot of attaboys and affirmation, that type of thing. So you're going like, "Doug, I don't have much pride anyway." But when it comes to bringing out the best in others, when it comes to developing a team, this really becomes an issue of what I call spotlight leadership. A spotlight leader is one that puts the spotlight on others. That you recognize that you could be in the spotlight because you're the primary leader, you're the point person, you're the big cheese, you know, whatever you are, but you put the spotlight on other people where they're recognized, where their gifts can be developed, where they're valued, where they're appreciated, where the audience sees them instead of you. I actually think to be a great leader, you have to be okay with other people getting the credit. And that becomes a pride issue. Okay, and you have to make conscious choices. Is it my, you know, am I going to take the credit for this, or am I going to deflect it and put the spotlight on others? I think some of the best leaders I've ever seen are the people that you've never heard about. You've just not heard about them because they're behind the scenes building into other people and highlighting other people and putting the spotlight on other people. Okay, so first, you've got to give up your pride. Second, I think to be a great leader, you have to give up your perfectionism. So complete this sentence with me. If you want a job done right, you need to, do it yourself. And most of us in here, we live as if that's one of the Beatitudes, right? That, you know, we got to do it right. Well, if you're gonna bring out the best in others, what you have to do is you have to give away responsibility, and you've got to give up the fact that not everything has to be perfect. Now, for some of you, that's perfectionism is a sign of control, and control is the opposite of faith, right? And so if you can't control things out in your world, you try to control other people, or you want things to be perfectionistic, and you need to get into counseling for that. But, you know, I think the goal of leaders is you want people to be better than yourself. So the person I founded Download Youth Ministry with, his name is Josh Griffin, and he followed me as the high school pastor at Saddleback Church. And, you know, I told him, Kathy and I took him out, him and Angela out to dinner when we handed him the mantle, basically, you know, gave him the baton and said, "Josh, my dream is that it'll be like Doug Who." Yeah, I know he wrote a bunch of youth ministry books, but Doug Who. You know, I want you to tear apart anything that I've ever done and anything I can do to help you. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. I'm saying the only reason I'm able to do that is because somebody did that for me. And for some of you in here, you've never had anybody do that for you. And so you don't know that. So I've got this guy named Jim Burns in my life. He was my youth pastor, my biggest hero. He's here teaching somewhere here today. He's unbelievable. And when I meet somebody, or somebody will mention somebody's name and they go, "Yeah, but they're arrogant, or they're cocky, or they're this, or they're that." Here's what I think. They didn't have a Jim Burns in their life. Because they're really good. I mean, that person's a good person. He's doing great things, or she's doing great things. They just didn't have a Jim Burns in their life to say it'll be okay, and you don't have to make it perfect, and just go and risk and take a chance and that type of thing. But, you know, to be a great leader and bring out the best in others, you got to give up perfectionism. That, you know, you're insecure leaders, let me say it this way. If you're an insecure leader, you will never bring out the best in others. You just won't, because insecure people want to make it about themselves. So you'll be putting the spotlight back on yourself rather than putting it, you're too busy building your own value. So these are kind of tough, but I think these are kind of starting points for bringing out the best in leaders. So insecure leaders will never bring out the best in others. Number three is to bring out the best in others, you have to give them your genuine belief. It's not just belief. Oh, you're the greatest. You're going to do it. No, it's genuine belief. Like, no, I really believe in you. And if you think about the people who were influential in your life, the Jim Burnses in your life, they were great at something. They were great at listening. They were great at challenging you. They were great at being present. But one of the things that they had in common is that they believed in you. And that is a really good message to have. Think about this. If you could have somebody believe in you, man, it would just relieve some of your stress. It would give you a freedom to be who you are. But some of you in here are posturing all the time in your leadership because you're trying to get somebody in your church team to recognize you or recognize what you're doing. And instead, you know, if you had somebody believing in you, it just allows you to breathe. It allows you to be who God created you to be. It allows you to move forward. Does this make sense? So the flip of this is that people that you're leading, if you want to bring out the best in them, you've got to believe in them and give them genuine belief. Let me tell you one more Jim Burns story. It was when I was a junior in high school. He saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. We were playing Ultimate Frisbee in the church parking lot, and I was very competitive, and I'm sure at one point I like hip-checked a girl into the bushes or something like that in order to catch the Frisbee. And afterwards, Jim pulled me aside, and I don't see him angry very often, but he kind of like, you know, pushed me against the wall. And this was the 70s when you could actually hit kids, in church. And he said something to the effect, here's what I remember, is, Doug, you have great leadership abilities and you've never even seen it. But you've got to make some decisions about what is most important to you, because when you care more about the Frisbee than that girl, you're a jerk. Okay? When you care more about winning than the people on the field, he goes, that's not leadership. You have, and he goes, I believe that you're either going to be a great leader or like a great failure. I'm sure he didn't say a great failure, but that's kind of what I heard in my, you know, junior and high school brain. But it was just that was that belief, and I've held on to that belief. I wrote a book called Purpose Driven Youth Ministry. And it became the best-selling book in the history of youth ministry. It's like in 25 different languages. Well, Jim wrote a book called High School Ministry, which, you know, in the 80s was the textbook. And Jim read my manuscript of Purpose-Driven Youth Ministry, and he said, Doug, it's good. It's good. But it's not great. He goes, you need more time on this. I believe this book will change the way we do youth ministry. Now get back to work. I'm like, okay, if you believe that it will be, I mean, I just need somebody to believe. And so what I've found in the church, in leadership, everybody you're working with, they are just dying for somebody to come alongside them metaphorically and go, I believe in you. And then prove it with your support. So now, belief, this right here, this is an intangible part of leadership. Because you can't go up to that person you work with every day and put your arm, you know, on their shoulders and awkwardly stare and go, I believe in you. Go get them. You know, give them a little pat on them. But you can't do that, all right? So there's an intangible part of this, but it's very real. Because belief is a decision. Belief is a decision. Belief is a decision that you help them understand that they're wonderful, that they're valuable, that they're created to do good things, and they deserve your confidence. Now, if you're a leader of others, let me just give you a little tip. You know, remind people occasionally how talented they are. Remind people occasionally how talented they are. And some people will be defensive of that. Well, I just don't want them to get a big head. Look, if they're in ministry, they're not going to get a big head. Okay, and usually big-headed people are insecure people, so they need even more belief. Does that make sense? Okay, just remind them how talented and gifted they are. Another way that you believe in them is to affirm them or encourage them. That's very, very practical. Now, leaders brag. Leaders brag on other leaders, putting the spotlight on, not just in front of his dad, but I was doing that in front of the executive pastor, the senior pastor, other leadership team. That's what we do. We encourage them. And by the way, praise in public, criticize in private. Okay? So praise in public. It doesn't cost you anything. And it's just a way to communicate belief in those that you're leading.
I mean, there are so many tweetable things from what Doug Fields just said. I took a couple of them down. To be a great leader, you have to give up perfectionism. Man, that is so good. And then probably my favorite, perfectionism is a sign of control, and control is the opposite of faith. Man, that is so... You see why Doug Fields has written 50 books and is so influential when he keeps dropping absolute gems like that. Hey, without further ado, we're going to throw it straight over to Sarah Bragg and Dan Scott interviewing Amber Baker.
Before we dive into learning about how to get our teams on the same page and get the most out of the people that are on our teams, give a little snapshot about who you are.
Great. Well, again, thanks for having me. My name's Amber Baker. I'm the family pastor at Grace Church of Glendora, Southern California.
You're lucky. You're so lucky. Yeah.
The weather.
I died
beautiful.
A little on the inside because, like, I'm a little jealous.
Yeah. It's a little cold here today, I have to admit. I'm not used to this. But yeah, so I'm a mom. I've been married for 20 years. I have four children. I have an 18-year-old. Yes. 18-year-old who's a freshman in college. I have a 14-year-old son that's just about ready to go to high school, and twin boys that are 12 and finishing up sixth grade.
Wow.
So life is busy.
12-year-old twin boys.
Yeah.
Like, I just kind of want to, like, have a whole nother podcast.
Yes, exactly.
Right now.
Let me tell you, I'm in full-time ministry and have been for over 20 years. So I love people. I love teams. I love families. So
yes.
It's a little bit about myself.
Yeah, that's I love great. That. Well, one of the things that comes with leading teams that I think a lot of times we get thrown into leading teams before you even know how to lead a team. I know that's happened to me before. And I just think,
it happens in the church a lot.
Yes. Like you appear to be a good leader and you know these things. And so we put you in this leadership role and then you feel a little bit like you're drowning.
Oh,
like,
absolutely. When I first started in ministry, I was just finishing up college. I got my first full-time position. I sat down in the seat and I had no idea what I was supposed to do. None. I didn't even know how to put together an event, even though I had all this education, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know how to put together a calendar. Nobody taught me what it's like to work with different personalities and team members and schedules. I really felt like it took me a good 5 years to figure out what in the world I was doing.
Well, and I think for me as a leader, I tend, especially in my younger days of leading, I was like, well, I'm just not good at that. Maybe I'm just not good at it and I just don't need to do that. But I think there's ways to learn how to do it,
yes,
right? There's
absolutely.
Ways to flex that muscle and to
absolutely.
Grow as a leader, to know how to get the most of your team. So why don't more leaders get the best out of their team?
Oh, gosh, we could go a million different directions. But I think some of it is understanding your team is really important. And I think as leaders, sometimes we forget. We have so many tasks. We have so many things to do that we don't become students of our team. And understanding who they are and their personalities and their temperaments are so important for a dynamic team and for a team to work together. I am a certified Real Colors coach. Real Colors is a temperament personality training.
I'm a yellow.
You're yellow?
Yeah. For real yellow.
For gold all the way. Yeah.
I think that I'm a yellow, but are there two different kind of color things?
So there's a True Colors and a Real Colors. They're very similar. There's probably other temperament things out there like that. But for Real Colors, there's four different colors. And what's cool is that God has made us all four colors because we are created in his image, right? Yeah. And so we can have all the different types of temperaments, but we naturally lead out of our top two. And so there's four colors. Gold are your task-oriented, to-do list, check it off, on-time people. If you're, you know, if you're 10 minutes early, you're on time. You have your greens that are your analytical deep thinkers. They often have a smaller amount of friends, but very deep friendships. Then you have your blues, and they're your emotional relational people. They care about your feelings and the emotion of the person. They have lots and lots of friends often. And then you have your oranges, and they are the life of the party people. That you can spot an orange usually within the first 30 seconds of being around them. They're typically loud. They're fun. Boundaries are kind of guidelines. They have rules. What are rules, right? They also are
maybe
great.
Maybe I'm that. I don't know.
Maybe you're a combo. Yeah. Who knows? You can be your own opposite. And so they are people that make it fun and that push you to think a little differently. And they often work really hard, but it doesn't look like they're working because they love to have fun in the process. And so they'll blow in really fast, work really hard, and then go have fun. So those are the four. And so we often operate out of our top two. And so in team settings, it's important to understand each of your team members, and not just so that you know them, but so that you can speak in their language, the language that they understand. Yeah. So if you can't go to a blue who's emotional and relational and give them only tasks, well, you could, but you're just not going to be the best leader you can be. But if you go to them
and they'll be really frustrated. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Because they want to emotionally connect with you first before you give them tasks. And once you do that, if you understand that team member that way, then you actually can get more done.
Gosh,
what led you to want to like dive into temperaments? Yeah.
You know, I was part of Jim Weidman's Infuse group.
Oh,
and
he's a friend of the pod.
Absolutely. I love Jim. He's a good friend of mine. I'm one of his coaches for his Infuse group. But the very first time I went through Infuse, he did this as a team for us Infusers. And I remember walking away thinking, this could be something I could use in every setting of my life, in parenting, in staff relationships, with volunteers. Yeah. It's so practical and so easy to understand. So from that first time in doing it, I went and got trained. And
you know, I think just thinking about, was it gold? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the task?
That's the task.
Okay, so I think I might be that.
You think that's that?
I think that might be me. And I think that's, I could see where that would be so hard to relate to people who are on your team who are not also task driven. Because I'm looking at the end goal, like we got to make these things happen.
Right.
And if you're over there just like having fun, or you're over there crying for some reason, like, you know, something sweet happened. You know, I'm like, why are you crying?
Like,
you know,
what's happening? Can you just like get on with it, please? Like, we have some work to do.
We don't have time for emotions.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
I could see where that would be a really hard way for my personality and for any of them to be able to truly relate to that person to get the best out of them, to make them love where they are and love what they're doing and give me the best results.
It seems like it would be a balancing act for the leader.
Absolutely.
That you are continually looking at the dials that you're turning.
Because
Reggie says, you know, if we're all on the same page, we can accomplish more together,
correct,
right? Like this whole conference is about one voice.
Right.
So you have these four very unique individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have a life of a party who like really never wants to do anything on task.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
But you have work to accomplish.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? Is it an art? Is it a science? Is it a little bit of both?
I think it's both. I think it's both. If you look at art and science, art is to be displayed.
Yeah.
Right. And science is about the little detail. And you see science, but it often comes out as art.
Mm.
If you look at a flower or a butterfly, right? There is a lot of science to that, but it's art. And so I think with getting your team on the same page, I think the art piece is that's what it looks like on a Sunday morning. What is your team?
Mm-hmm.
How is your team displayed on a Sunday morning?
Mm.
Are you working together? Are attitudes good? Are you presenting a united front as a team? But the science is the systems and the details and the hard work that you put in behind where nobody realizes. So I think getting people on the same page, you need both.
Yeah.
You need the systems, the details, but you have to be able to have fun together and be that cohesive team.
Yeah, because I'm thinking there must be a lot of things you need to do as a leader behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
So when you are in front of all of the families that are showing up each Sunday, you are at your best. So
absolutely.
What's happening behind the scenes then?
So, oh gosh, it could be a myriad of things, right? But I think systems are important.
Mm-hmm.
I think for getting any family on the team, family ministry team together, systems are important. So that could be anything from, hey, you have a weekly report that you need to turn in to me on Thursday just so I know like who you've talked to this week and, you know, what projects are in the works.
Yeah.
Or it could be brainstorming meetings where you're coming together and you're rethinking how maybe you do check in or how you pass out t-shirts for VBS, or, right? So those behind the scenes hard work detail makes actually a difference. I think what's important to remember is that with any team, foundation of trust is really important. If you can't trust your team, if you don't have relationships with them, if you don't know the ins and outs of who they are and what they like and when they're having, you can tell when they're having a good day or bad day, then you're starting with an unsure foundation.
I think that's key what you just said, because I think a lot of leaders, they see their job description, and their job description doesn't include really understanding their team.
It doesn't, no.
And so I think there's probably a lot of listeners who feel overwhelmed and they don't know where to start, and they're thinking, I don't have time to get to know each one of these team members on like this basis know what to do.
Yeah, and if you have 20 volunteers on a Sunday morning, you're right, it's going to be really difficult to get to know every single one and know all their likes and dislikes, but you can get to know some.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Find this month, Lord, who are the key people I need to really connect with this month? Yeah. And help me figure them out and help me to understand them. And then what's next month? So you don't have to bite it all, you know, eat the whole elephant all at once, right? Yes. Just a little at a time, and just asking the Holy Spirit to direct you and to lead you who are the people I need to connect with now.
Yeah.
And over time, then that ends up building that cohesive trust foundation.
That's so great.
So from your perspective, what percentage of our challenges with getting the right people on board in our team are related to just not having the right people on your team?
Oh, gosh, percentages. I am not a math person.
You're like,
so
73.
Yeah, 0.25. You know, that's a hard one. When you're talking about volunteers, the beautiful thing if we have set them up correctly is to be able to say to them, hey, you know, gosh, it just doesn't feel like it's the right fit for you. How are you feeling? Do you feel like it's the right fit?
Because it really is probably a good chance that they feel that tension as well.
Absolutely.
But they feel bad saying, I'm going to bail on you.
Right. And it'd be better to have the conversation before than they actually bailing. It could be that, you know, I thought I really loved second graders, but I found out I don't. Right? I would rather rock babies in the nursery, right? Yeah. And so it's better to have those tough conversations when you start to see those warning signs, like, there's a problem or potential problem, than waiting until it gets to a critical space.
Is that something that you could kind of prep beforehand? Like, as you're bringing in someone in the interview process, this isn't your lifelong, like, it's okay if this doesn't work, or like, is there some prepping that you can kind of already institute?
We had, we were at a church years ago, and they did this really great kind of 1 week here, 1 week here, 1 week here, 1 week here.
Like a trial.
So the first month, this volunteer was in every different space to kind of see what they felt was the best fit for them. And I loved that idea.
That's a great idea.
And I know that some Sunday mornings or Wednesday nights, we just need people in the classroom, right?
Yeah.
Right. And so I get that that seems high and lofty, but the time and investment in that will yield great results. And when you prep them and say, you know, we're going to test this out, if at any point you have some struggles or you're not sure this is the right fit, come, let's talk. Yeah. And then you check in with them 2 months later. How's it going?
Yeah.
What are you seeing? And so that's that front end work that's really important, because it lays that good foundation. Staff wise, if it's a paid staff and they're not on the right, you know, is it the wrong person on the
really
bus at
hard.
All?
Yeah.
Or is it just wrong seat? Maybe you need to redefine their position, but those are really tough calls when it's a staff member.
So on that, what are some tips of like hiring well?
Yeah.
And firing well.
I know.
I know. And I think the church, I think, has really struggled with this.
Yeah.
You know, business, you just go in there and you're like, you're done. Like, it's just not working out.
Right.
Where in the church, we feel this obligation to care for them as we are walking them through.
Or passive aggressive.
Yes. Or we give them so much grace. Okay, well, we'll give them a 90-day review. Yeah. Like another 90-day review. Yeah. Another 90.
And being a leader, sometimes you have to make those tough calls.
Yeah.
You just do. I think part of our problem when we hire staff is we don't spend enough time truly figuring out who they are and their personalities and how they fit on team. That's why I love Real Colors, because you can actually look at your team and go, gosh, we have so many golds. We need a little more creativity than what we have currently. So we really need to be looking for a person that has this type of gift sets.
That's
right. Because you want to complement your team that way. Yes. So I think sometimes we forget.
And that could take time.
Absolutely.
But I don't know who has said it, but it's like, hire slow, fire fast.
Oh, that's
so like,
that's good.
Do the front end work of the research of who do we need, who's the best person on this team, what is the spot we're really, really trying to fill.
That's hard.
Yeah.
It is. Because we feel the felt need that.
Right?
Yeah, like we need to get this person on immediately.
Yeah,
but then as soon as they're like, oh, wait, this is really not the right person, then we just have to like rip the Band-Aid off and keep moving.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So you have the right team. Let's imagine that we all live in this perfect world
perfect.
Where we have all the seats filled on the bus.
No one struggles.
No one struggles.
Ever.
Okay. But how do we work towards alignment then? So we have the people.
Right.
How do we get them speaking the same language, on the same page, working towards the same goal?
Drip by drip, right? It's just this consistent process and being a broken record. Well, I don't know that many people know what a record is anymore, but
those of you who have been born before, 19.
But just repeat, mm-hmm. repeat. Get everybody together as often as you can, and however that looks, right? So a staff team that has hours in the office, great. Do, you know, come together for lunches and meetings and coffees and those types of things. Use the same language over and over. If it's a volunteer team, we started using Zoom as our meeting. It was really hard to get everybody to show up at the same time as schedules, this and that. With Zoom, you can be at home in your pajamas, you can be on your cell phone driving, whatever it is. And so again, we're meeting face to face just through technology, but continually drip.
And Zoom, Zoom, for those of you that don't know, because you might not, it's like a video chat capability for meetings. A lot of businesses use it, but you wouldn't need to do a paid service, because you could do a Google Hangout or FaceTime or
absolutely. And even with Zoom, you can do, they have some free options.
Oh, great.
That's great.
That's awesome.
So it's been really great. I meet with ministry leaders from across the U.S. via Zoom. Hey, I want to chat about this. And so they just...
That's how we write 252 curriculum. We Zoom in some of our writers and have creative meetings.
I love it. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a way of leaning into where technology is now, rather than having to have, we're going to have a leader training on Sunday at 1 o'clock at the church.
Yeah. Like, gone are those days.
Right. And then be super frustrated that no one's showing up.
Yes.
Yeah. When I first started ministry, that was it. Saturday morning trainings once a month. You know, we'd provide breakfast and there's no way I could get people to show up on Saturday morning. I can't show up on Saturday morning.
Well, and a lot of those things, like Zoom, I know you can record it. And so then leaders can watch it later at their convenience.
Yes, it's great.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for a leader who has a team and maybe their team culture is just hanging by a thread?
So the thing that comes to my mind first is, as Christ followers, we have to get on our knees before the Lord and say help, right? Mm-hmm. Because he understands, and he's going to help us be creative in that. I can give you some suggestions, but ultimately it's going to be the Lord that directs your steps. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, because we're busy, because we have so many responsibilities, we forget as Christians to stop sometimes and say, whoa, oh, wait. You can help me with this, Lord?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, thanks for the reminder, right? Yeah. And so really making a conscious effort to go before the Lord and say, help, what do I do? How can I best serve these people? How can we change the culture? And I have no doubt that the Holy Spirit will just drop those thoughts into our mind. It'll give us the creativity to do what we need to do. So that's one. And two, I think if it's at a place that it's not too toxic, I think having fun together makes a huge difference. We had a meeting a couple weeks ago, and I knew we had to get some tough stuff done. So I brought some cards, and we played a couple rounds of speed solitaire as a team before we started our meeting.
Yeah.
And one of my coworkers, who is a green all the way, was like, why are we playing a game? Come on, just trust me, I promise. And it's fast and it's fun, and we were laughing, and it just broke the ice of not going to have this formal meeting where we're going to hash out some details. But we started with fun. So I think fun fun is an important thing. Relationships are an important thing. And like you said earlier, at some point in time, you might just have to make some changes. Yeah. And the thing is, we have to trust God in those changes because we get emotionally involved, right?
Yeah.
And there are friends and there are team members, but at some point in time, it's the kingdom that we're working for, right? Mm-hmm. And the kingdom of God. And so we have to make those tough calls of, Lord, this isn't the right place for them. And I know that you care more about them than I do. And yeah. so you're going to take care of them in this place of need. Yeah. So
that's so great.
So where do you... A practical tip maybe mm-hmm. of if you don't feel like you're strong at understanding your
That's
team,
a great question.
Like reading the people on your team, mm-hmm. what can you do to develop that in yourself?
There are so many resources out there. I mean, we are not shy of resources here in our culture now, but any kind of personality, temperament, there's so many different ones out there. And just pick one that mm-hmm. speaks to you and become a student of it.
Yeah.
Read books, find blogs, you know, TED Talks, whatever it be to help you
yeah.
understand that and then just go for it. There isn't a perfect one out there,
yeah.
but you just want one that's simple enough for your team to understand. When I was working at Azusa Pacific University, we are strengths-based university. And so mm-hmm. it was the first time I'd ever taken the Strength Finder. And I felt like it was the first time it was like, oh, this is me.
Someone understood me.
This is me. Like, oh my gosh. But what it didn't, I knew what you were and I knew what I was, but what it didn't do is it didn't tell us how to work together.
Yeah.
And that's the key. Whatever, as ever you search out to find what's best for your team, you want to find whatever temperament or personality or whatever it is to understand how to communicate with one another. Because mm-hmm. there's no point in me knowing who you are and me knowing myself, but not knowing how to communicate, because that's the key. So whatever it is, be a student of it, find it. And
I think simple is great. Because, I mean, that's
and
one
that's
of
why
the
I love
things.
Real colors.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That's one of the things
simple.
I love about the colors as well, because, like, we did it with our family.
Yeah.
Like, and
yeah.
I know, like, these are my kids, and this is how we communicate with them. And we all know it.
Yeah.
And we can remember it. We don't have to remember, like, this name or these letters or, any of
we
those
We were
things.
Having a meeting, and two of our staff members were just going round and round, and we were not coming to a conclusion. And I finally said, time out. You're speaking as a green and you're speaking as a blue. And just that simple language was enough for them to realize, oh, okay, yep, I am. And because they would never see eye to eye, or the green would end up winning out of the blue because the blue would feel bad that, you know. And so it's just the whole process. So it was great to have this common language to be able to say, stop, we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
This is how we proceed forward. So simple, and the common language is huge.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, leadership is... it's a long game. It's not this sprint, it's a marathon.
Yeah.
And knowing that even if we do know what colors we are or whatever temperaments we are, mm-hmm. we're not going to overnight this perfect team, that all of this takes time, right?
Absolutely. I was on staff at a church for 14 years. And by year 10, I felt like, all right, we're getting somewhere. This is good. Like we're gelling. We've got great volunteers. They understand their place. We're a great team. We've got some coordinator. You know, it felt good. But it was 10 years.
Yeah.
And in our instant gratification society, that is a foreign concept.
Yeah.
And so, but fight for the longevity. Don't give up. Keep going. Keep being a student. You got this.
That's great.
This is great. Thank you for hanging out
with us. Yeah, thank you.
Don't you just love Amber Baker? I mean, she is absolutely incredible. So much wisdom in what she had to say. I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. I love that she said, make having fun with your team a priority. I mean, that just speaks right to the heart, I think, of a 3 on the Enneagram. But speaking of, she also said that leaders must be students of their teams and each individual's personalities and communication styles. Now, that drives straight into the heart of what Enneagram is all about, which really Enneagram is currently the Christian version of CrossFit. Everybody is posting about this on Instagram. They don't post about CrossFit anymore. It's all about that. I want to ask K-Daddy. I don't know if he's still there. K-Daddy, are you still there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Enneagram. Do you know what your Enneagram number is?
I'm working on that. I haven't yet done that, but that's a part of my CrossFit for this year.
Well played, sir. Well played. I also love what Dan Scott had to say, that leadership is a long game. It is a marathon, not a sprint. I just want to leave that encouragement with all of you guys. I know that sometimes in ministry, leadership can be daunting. You can feel tired. You can feel worn out. You can feel weak and fragile because we run at a sprinter's pace, but it is a marathon. So I just want to encourage all of you this week, take some moments just to stop, to rest, to breathe, to be reminded that it is a marathon, to be reminded of all the miles that you've already put on the clock. Look back in the rearview mirror today and just think of how far you have come. It is a marathon, not a sprint, and sometimes we need to remind ourselves of that. And once you've taken that breath, once you've taken that rest, make sure you go over to Apple and leave us a review or a rating. We would love for you to do that. It just helps us get the word out a little bit more. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Make sure you check out today's show notes. There are some absolute gems in there today. You can find them at thinkorangepodcast.com. And as always, when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.